Hey everyone, this is James Mackey and welcome to the Breakthrough Hiring Show. Join us as we cover high-level thought leadership and step-by-step guides on how to make people a competitive advantage for your organization. I'm incredibly proud to be the CEO of Secure Vision, the sponsor of this show and the number one contract recruiting, embedded recruiting, and RPO firm. A thank you to our partners, Greenhouse, the hiring operating system for people-first companies, and GEM, the all-in-one hiring solution recruiters love. Let's go. Hello and welcome to Talent Acquisition Trends and Strategy. I'm your host, James Mackey, and today we are joined by Jim Burns. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you, James. Nice to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you. Could you share a little bit about your background with everybody so they know what kind of perspective you're coming from on the topics we're going to discuss?
Sure, I'd be happy to. So I've been in healthcare recruiting and operations for a long time. I started my career in travel nursing in recruiting and operations. So a different subset of the nursing population that travels to typically 3-month assignments in different areas of the country. So I might be a nurse that I live in Boston and I want to become a travel nurse, and I may sign on with a travel nurse company. I interview at a hospital in Seattle over the phone, and they accept me based on my resume, my credentials, my recommendations, my work experience. And I go and travel to Seattle and I live there for 3 months and work in that hospital, and I may extend or I may want to go somewhere else. So that's a whole other industry that's exploded over the years, particularly during the pandemic, right? When hospitals had to really staff up with nurses. And I'll save that for further in the conversation, where that put a real drain on our supply in pediatric home care of nurses who said, oh my gosh, for this one time in my life, I might be able to, really go monetize, and I'm going to go, right? So that put a real strain on the available nurse pool for not only Thrive Skilled Pediatric Care, but all of our competitors and all the other clinical settings. So I was in travel nursing for a while, worked for a really great company that merged and went public, and really a ton of fun. I learned a lot. And then I transitioned into a company that worked in health IT. So when hospitals and docs offices and everybody was going from paper to electronic health records, the company that I work for, we kind of went in on the heels of some of these EMR vendors like McKesson and Siemens, Cerner, Epic, Meditech, and we hired consultants to help with those installs, or maybe legacy support, or maybe training after those systems launched. So, and that was a ton of fun because, the consultants worked on these projects and we got to kind of live that experience with them. And it was a super healthy business in terms of demand. And that company got acquired, and, again, another really fun time in my career. So I joined Thrive Skilled Pediatric Care 6 years ago, almost at the inception of the company. And, your network, right, that you build over the years, the people I had worked with at the travel nurse company and at the health IT company, were my connections to coming into Thrive Skilled Pediatric Care, right? So two people I had worked with joined Thrive, and they, called me and said, hey, brand new company, pure play startup, private equity backed, looking for someone to help with recruiting. So, and we thought of you, Jim. So I said, oh, that's awesome, right? So I met with the CEO founder, offered me the role here, and here I am 6 years later, right? So, and when I joined Thrive Skilled Pediatric Care, we had nothing. We had some laptops, we had some chairs and desks, and we built it literally from acquiring technology platforms to doing our first acquisition. And early stage, that's how we built the company. We acquired some pediatric home care agencies: Texas, North Carolina, Colorado, Arizona, Virginia, and now we're at 10 states, 31 offices, and growing.
Okay, cool. So how many employees when you started, and where are you at today? Just so we have that context too.
So when I started, I was the fourth person in the door, and today we're 2,500.
Okay, cool. Yeah. That's significant growth, and that's over 6 years?
Yeah, 6 years. Yep. And most of those are nurses and therapists, physical therapists, occupational therapists, speech language pathologists, caregivers that are in the field, right? And work with the medically fragile children that we take care of on a daily basis.
So you mentioned, so a lot of the recruiting you're doing is for project-based, like quarterly, three-month engagements. Is that right?
No, that was old company. That was travel nursing, right? So all the recruiting we do today is all nurses, mostly nurses, physical therapists, occupational therapists, speech language pathologists, to work with the kids that we support, the patients that we support, which are medically fragile children, right? And these kids kind of run up and down the acuity scale, right? Like we generally get them when they're coming out of the hospital. So most of them are premature births, right? And they've got some medical complexity as a result of being preemies. And they're coming home from the hospital somewhere on the acuity scale, right? So it might be that their throat muscles aren't developed yet and they can't swallow. So they have to eat through a feeding tube. And as a result of that, they qualify for nursing care in the home, right? Some kids might have been in the NICU for months and they're coming home with a trach and they're coming home on a ventilator and they get 24/7 round the clock care, right? So they're not quote unquote sick enough to be in the hospital anymore, but not well enough not to need nursing care. So our kids kind of go up and down that acuity scale. Mm-hmm. And at any point in time, you know, they might be back in the hospital where they've had an event, they get sick, or they're going in for a surgery that they have to have that'll hopefully eventually make them better, right? So all the recruiting we do are for caregivers that take care of med-frag kids.
Are these primarily like W-2 employees or contractors? Like how's W-2?
All W-2. Yeah. So okay. all W-2 hourly employees. Depending on how many hours a week they work, they get benefits. So, you know, for 30 hours a week, they get benefits light. For 36 hours a week, they get a little more benefits. And then for, 40 hours a week and more, they get a really robust, rich benefits plan, inclusive of PTO, medical, dental, life, 401k, normal benefits stack.
That's great.
Yep.
So getting into recruiting, one of the things that we wanted to discuss was challenges in finding and hiring top talent at the lower end of the pay scale. So is it that your team is kind of mid-tier when it comes to comp plans, or it's just more so you position as the full package because you have the benefits too? Or what would you consider like low end of the pay scale? Is it like specific, like would you consider it industry? Would you consider it where your company specifically fits in the market? It's some context there, and then I'm curious to see how you approach hiring in that space.
Yeah, no, so that's a great question. So one of the challenges in our business is, so the kids that we take care of, right? Like they don't have insurance. So their parents have insurance, right? So they may be an element of what's called private duty nursing on their parents' commercial plan, right? Now, generally that's going to be a cap benefit. So a parent's commercial plan may have 80 hours a year of private duty nursing, in-home nursing services, right? Now, the kids are riding their parents' plan. We could chew that up in, 2 weeks or a week, right? So then the kids kick over to generally the state Medicaid plans, right? So Medicaid is federally funded from the federal government to the state government. States get their Medicaid dollars, and then they decide how they're going to allocate them, right? So they set the reimbursement rates. So for us, the challenge in wage is for the states we operate in, what are their Medicaid reimbursement rates, right? So for some states, it's fairly healthy, right? Where we can compete in wage with other clinical settings for the nurses we're trying to attract. In some states, that Medicaid reimbursement rate is low, and therefore, we can't afford to pay our nurses wages that they can make in the hospital, doc's offices, urgent care centers, wherever it is. So we've got to compete at a different level. And for us, competing is on the recruiting side, recruiting and retention, it's really service, right? So, the states are super sensitive right now to what's going on with you know, medically fragile children, even adult home care too, right? Kind of, you know, that's generally going to be Medicare reimbursed, but you know, it's more cost effective when people get care at home. They get better, right? Because they're in their environment. So kids are no different, right? But they're some of these kids, the complexity, you know, they need full-time, round-the-clock nursing services, right? And depending on what that state reimbursement looks like, again, it makes it difficult for us to compete in wage. The nurses love the clinical setting. They love working one-on-one with a medically fragile child. It's why they went to nursing school, right? One-on-one patient care. I can really make a difference in this kid's life. I can become part of that family, and I can watch that child progress and eventually get better. And then they don't need us anymore. Like, that's awesome. When the kids graduate services, right? You know, we celebrate, because that, you know, that child's on their way to, you know, a normal upbringing and hopefully a fruitful life. But while they're getting care from us, the reimbursement structure in some of the states makes it really hard for us to compete in wage. So we got to compete in other ways.
So you mentioned experience too. So there's obviously like the mission aspect, right? Like which we touched on, which is this is very mission driven. People want to make an impact, one-on-one care. And that does make a lot of sense. And I think that in and of itself is a significant driver. I don't know how many competitors you have in each state, but is it a competitive market where there are several companies offering this solution?
It is. It's a competitive market.
But I guess yeah. Then, but like all of them have the same, fall into the same challenge.
That's right.
Okay. So that's right. Pretty level playing field.
Bingo.
Competitively. Okay.
For sure. Yeah.
So then you mentioned experience, right? So you mentioned experience being a standout as a way to attract talent. What do you mean by that? Is that like benefits package? Is that like PTO? Is that,
experience, James, what I mean is, the context is the experience the nurse has, meaning how's her experience with us? How's her customer experience? Because we consider the nurses, the candidates that apply to our jobs as customers, because without them, we don't have a business. If we don't have the nurses to treat the kids, we're out of business. Like, we don't have no revenue stream, right? Because the nurses go out, they bill, we bill Medicaid, and that's how we make our money. But mm-hmm. But without that, those nurses, we don't have a business, right? So unfortunately, there's no shortage of medically fragile kids, right? So we just don't have enough nurses to serve all the kids that need service. So it's a very competitive market, and not only recruiting nurses, you know, every hospital will tell you they struggle to recruit nurses, right? We're no different, and we're in pediatric home care. So the experience that the nurse has with us, right? That very first phone call from one of our recruiters talking to the nurse about taking care of medically fragile children, our purpose, our core values, right? But you're right. The playing field's completely level. We know, you know, within a geographic radius of one of our offices, we've got competitors. We're all getting reimbursed the same. Now it's how do you slice the pie? So plus or minus, we're about all the same in terms of wage. Plus or minus, we're probably very similar in benefits. And then the question becomes, how do we service our nurses better than our competitors?
Right, right. So definitely candidate experience is huge, right?
That's it.
And then on an ongoing basis, are there any like processes or experiences offered like beyond that? I'm just curious to see what are you selling in terms of experience in the talent acquisition process?
So in terms of the experience for us, it's when a nurse reaches out to us, right? Our goal is to reach back out to them when they apply to one of our jobs, is to reach out to that nurse. If it's not within minutes, it's within hours, and right. Say to that nurse, hey, you know, thanks so much for your interest in our company. You know, tell me about your experience as a nurse. Tell me what's important to you, right? Is it making the most money possible? Because if that's the case, then we're probably not the employer for you, right? We're probably not the setting for you. But if it's a healthy blend of, you know, fair wage and a competitive benefit stack, and if you're looking for a work setting that gives you real purpose and, you know, is very meaningful, then pediatric home care with MedFrag kids is the spot, right? So that in terms of it's a combination of speed, service, and then ongoing relationship building, right? So again, these are our customers, right? And if we're not servicing them, someone else is calling them. I mean, I can, you know, every nurse probably comes home at the end of his or her workday, his or her shift, looks in their email and probably sees 20 to 25 employment solicitations, right? So they're not at a, they're not at a shortage for opportunity. It's where do they connect? You know, do they feel like they're getting the right level of attention from their employer? And that's really what we're all about. It's, that's a differentiator for us. How do we, how do the nurses connect with us? How do we build relationships, and how can we retain them?
Gotcha. Is this the type of industry too, where it's like, if a competitor offers them like another, you know, a slightly higher wage, like a dollar or two more an hour, that they're going to jump? Is that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's, that's high. Yeah. I've been in that type of situation before in the past. So I know that that's like, that's highly competitive.
It really is. And not all of them, James, like, you know, you can make an hour, you can make a buck or two an hour go away with service. Right. And, and, you know, you do a really good job, and, you know, another company might call you and you say, you know, something, ThriveSkill Pediatric Care, like, I've got a great relationship with, you know, the office folks, and they really treat me well, and they check in on me, and, you know, I really love the company, and I, you know, all those things, right? And they go, yeah, I'm good, right? Someone calls them, it's $5 more an hour, you know, well, that's real money, right? So, you know, they may hop for that. But what we do when that happens, we make it a point to stay in touch with that nurse. Like, those people get flipped back to my team in recruiting, and we reach out a month later and we go, hey, is the grass greener over there? Or you maybe think you might want to come back, right? So we make it a real point to stay connected with not only our employees, but those who have worked with us in the past and have left us, and we try to bring them back.
Yeah, that's smart. So can we, if we can get a little more tactical there, what does that process look like? Because I think, honestly, beyond your industry, I feel like that's just a good best practice. Like, whenever top performers move on, it's like almost like from a marketing perspective, it's like you put them into nurture phase almost, where you reach out and see how they're doing, and see if you can kind of like boomerang them back into the organization. And, you know, particularly in some industries too, it's like they come back a couple of years later, maybe they have new skills and new perspective to share. So
you got it.
What's the process around that? How do you bake that into process to make sure nobody slips through the cracks? And then that's a consistent motion for talent to go through.
Yeah, no, it's a great question, right? And this to me is where it kind of comes down to systems, process, and workflow, right? So without good systems that are, what do I want to say, kind of easy to navigate, but have a rich feature set, but aren't overburdensome, meaning, you know, like the system we use, I love it. It's, you know, I say it's got everything you want and nothing you don't, right? So we can operate really efficiently and quickly in our system and document our interactions with not only our candidates, but our employees, right? And with good systems, if people use them, you can scale, right? So now you're using the systems to kind of communicate with each other. We don't have to call each other on the phone, or we don't have to, you know, get on a Teams call and, you know, ask. We can look in the system, right? And that allows you to scale. So a good system coupled with good processes and workflows allows you that ability, not only stay connected with your current employee population, but when they leave you for whatever reason, right, then that allows you the ability to reach back out to them, right?
So what system are you using to reach back out though? Like, so when somebody leaves, like how is that recorded? That's in like an HRIS.
Yeah, you got it. Like an ATS system, right? And we're like, I'm a phone person. Right. I said this to someone a little while ago. I've never seen somebody accept a job over text, right? Without interaction from a human, right? I've never seen someone have a successful interview over text, right? So people do business with people, and you talk to people on the phone and you build relationships, and those don't have to be long conversations. They can be very transactional. It really depends on what does that customer want, right? And you read the customer, right? Do they want to talk for a while? And, you know, then you talk. If they're like very, you know, they're matter of fact and they say, you know, something, you don't have to check in with me every week. I'll call you when I need you, right? Like, okay, cool. But, you know, listen, I'm going to call you every 2 weeks just to say hello, right? And leave you a message. But and when they can hear you smile, makes a big difference, right? So you weigh your chances of getting a call back or an outreach back from someone over voicemail as opposed to text messaging, I think, is higher. Now, I think there's, you know, listen, use all methods of communication, right? You use phone, you use text, you use email, you use, you know, smoke signals, whatever it works for you, right? You use them all, but you gauge off the not only the candidate, but once they become an employee, how do they want to interact with you, right? Mm-hmm. And then again, when they leave you, that's about having a methodology that you follow of those touch points. So it's a month out after they've left. Hey, how's it going? You know, are you happy where you are? And if you're not getting full-time hours with that company you went to, right, would you be open to picking up some shifts with us, right? And we kind of, you know, we keep them in the nest, right? And
right.
Eventually maybe reel them back in, and one shift becomes two and two becomes four. And before you know it, we get them back full-time again, right? So, but it's those touches with those, and really, again, they're customers that we may have lost that we have the opportunity to pull back in. And we do a lot of that.
That's really smart. I feel like, again, that's transferable to a lot of industries. I mean, I definitely see it being a big part of your business, but
yep.
You know, even like for technology companies, for instance, right? Like why wouldn't, there should be some kind of cadence, like maybe it's more than a month, but a 6-month check-in, a 1-year check-in, you know, 18 month, like why not just twice a year, touch base with your top people and ask, hey, how are you doing? Do you like it? Hey, we have this opening. Would you be interested?
That's it.
Oh, also, by the way, like, is there anybody you know that might be interested, and kind of use it as a referral motion as well?
You got it, James.
Relationship.
That's it. You got it. Exactly. No, so not only are you trying to leverage your existing workforce for referrals, right? So people that are working for us in the field today, nurses, therapists, right? That they know nurses and therapists, right? So we are constantly reinforcing referrals, right? And what you notice is, you know, people talk about referral bonuses and my gosh, you know, we should offer a referral bonus. We got to up our referral bonuses. People don't refer people to a company because they're going to make $1,000 or $2,000 or, you know, $5,000, right? They refer people to a company because they're having a good experience with the company, right?
Right.
And if they're not having a good experience, it could be a $20,000 referral bonus and they're not going to refer someone because they're not going to say to their friend, hey, go work there and have a lousy experience. If you offer if you offer a fair, attractive, and it really doesn't even have, it doesn't have to be that much money, referral right. bonus, people just refer their friends because they're having a great experience with your company and saying, come work here. It's a great place to work.
Yeah. I think people too, when it comes to sometimes those types of bonuses, like people just consider it like thoughtful. Like we, you know, we have certain programs where people can earn like $25 gift card. Like it's not like $25 a life changing amount of money or anything. It's just that they, you know, they appreciate the gesture.
It's a token. That's right.
And again, yeah. Like they're not going to do the thing unless they believe in what you're building or,
that's
or
right.
think it's a good type of solution. So
that's right.
I agree with you. I don't think you always have to throw money at people to get them to contribute in a way. I think the one area that I feel like I have to throw a lot of money at introductions or referrals is like new client stuff, right? So we have like a really high powered referral network of like top influencers and, you know, mm-hmm. growth stage B2B.
Yep.
And we have a very lucrative program because these people are incredibly business high level executives. And they're just not going to do it unless we make it enough money for them to kind of go like, oh, wait,
right.
Okay, yeah, I'll send you a few email introductions, right?
Right.
So that, yeah. But generally speaking, that I feel like that's more of the exception to the rule.
Right.
Right.
Yep.
And by the way, those people, even for all that money, even if it's like six figures, they're still not going to do it if they don't believe in you.
That's exactly right.
They're not going to mess with it. They have
nope.
money. They don't need, you know.
That's
so
right.
It's even at any level, like, you know, whether or not there's a lot of money involved, like your reputation in the marketplace is still paramount.
That's it. They won't refer someone to you if they're not having a good experience. And if they don't believe in what you're doing or, you know, again, they're not good. They will not damage the relationship on the back end for monetary value. They just won't.
Right. It's short-sighted.
Too much at stake. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hear you.
Yeah.
Well, I have a question that wasn't actually in the outline of our conversation, but you mentioned growth through acquisition.
Yeah.
I, from a workflow process, you know, systems perspective, I would love to learn more about how you kind of pull in the talent acquisition function into one centralized function when you're going through acquisitions and hypergrowth. Could you just tell us a little bit about your experience in hypergrowth through acquisitions, keeping things organized, building out workflows, systems, tech.
Sure.
I would love, and if we could start with a strategy, maybe a story or two, and then really get actionable with like tactics, step by step, this is how you do it. Because that's the stuff that people listening in, you know, I think growth through acquisition and unify and ton acquisition. Nick, by the way, that's a good title or something like that for this chapter, but that's a topic we haven't discussed yet. And if we can get tactical and tell people exactly how to do it, there's a ton of value in that that we haven't done yet on the show.
Sure. So, and I'll be the first one to, you know, disclaimer, like, I don't have all the answers, right? I can just tell you kind of what's worked for us. And, you know, I've been in the, I tell people I've been in the human capital space for a long time, you know, my entire career, right? And when I say human capital, meaning, and, you know, you said it, James, like, you know, the humans do the work, right? And the humans are the customers. And without them, we don't have a business, right? So the human capital is the, you know, the people that create the value for the company. And it's important that they have a really good experience, right? So as it relates to acquisitions, those are hard. Like, well, the acquisition itself, the deal is easy, right? Putting the deal together isn't the hard part. The hard part then is the cultural piece, right? Because these acquisitions that we've made, you know, they're a pediatric home care company who's enjoyed success, you know, for years and maybe decades, right? And built up their company, and they're super proud of what they've built, as they should be. And now, you know, they got acquired, and the, you know, the owners are happy because they got a check, and the rest of the team, the operators are thinking, including, you know, the operators and the nurses, remember, who generate the revenue, were thinking, okay, what's this mean to me? Right. So now you got to kind of come in and say, well, listen, our goal is do no harm, right? Like, don't mess it up. So you want to come in slow, and you want to say, hey, you know, you used to be XYZ, and, you know, now we're going to change your name to Thrive Skilled Pediatric Care at, you know, ABC location, whatever it is. And, you know, we're nice people, right? And they go, oh yeah, sure. I know, we heard that before, right? And we say, no, we're really nice people. And with the again, the intent and the, you know, you got to hold true to it. Do no harm, right? Make sure you don't mess it up. So that's, you know, culturally embracing people of, you know, what's important to you and an employer, because guess what? You got a new one. And, you know, what makes you stay and what motivates you? And then wrapping kind of, you know, not only acclimation into that with the existing workforce, but then how do we turn on the recruiting engine, our recruiting engine in that region now as Thrive Skilled Pediatric Care, which if we're brand new, you know, the nurses and the other caregivers in that area are like, who the heck are you? Right. So we don't have brand awareness there. So now it's building brand awareness. And then it's slowly kind of getting, you know, getting the word out there and getting postings out there and getting presence on social media. And then, you know, slowly it starts to kind of germinate. And now you got a drip, and then you get a trickle, and then you get a flow. Right. But it's only predicated upon the people that do reach out to you. Are you responding to them? Do they feel like, you know, are you excited to hear from them? And are they excited to hear from you? Is it timely? Is it welcoming? And is it efficient? Right. And you do all that, you start to get, you know, you get things moving.
And some of these companies, I'm assuming they probably have their own internal talent departments, right? How have y'all managed that historically? Is that where it's like, you know, you give them a severance payment and they have to move on, or do they get absorbed into your internal talent team? And if so, what's the kind of process to get them up and running? I mean, are they essentially just doing what they're doing? They just report into you now, or how does that work?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's kind of been a bit of a mixed bag. We've acquired some talent folks from some of the acquisitions we've made. But for some of the locations that, you know, we've acquired, they were kind of on cruise control. You know what I mean? Like, they'd been around a while. You know, they were kind of good where they were with their growth. And, you know, there really wasn't a huge focus on acquiring more talent. They were, they were kind of just going along at that point. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, and not complacent, but they were good. Right. So now, you know, we come in and that's where some of the balance is. Like, you know, we're ready to, you know, okay, we're coming in with the go juice. You know, we want to grow. So, you know, it's in some cases a little bit of a cultural shift. But you know, growth isn't an option. Growth is something we have to and want to do, right? And we want to, right. And at the end of the day, really, it's because we want to take care of more medically fragile kids. We want to help more families, right? So for us, growth is a non-negotiable. And for some people, you know, they either got to kind of, you know, you're either in or out, right? So, and most have been in. It's been really, really good. But now it's a different workflow, methodology, system, and approach to the customer.
One of my favorite sayings, I actually got what I heard from Tony Robbins initially was life supports that which supports life. This concept of putting value, being value creators, and finding ways to be of service to your community and the people around you. And when you do that at scale, you're yourself rewarded with growth.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a really healthy business philosophy and something that I believe in. The more people that you serve and that you give value to, the more that you're going to see that growth as an organization or an individual.
So true.
Yeah. So I always loved that. That always stuck in my mind.
Yeah. It's a good quote.
Yeah. So, hey, quick question. I know you said that there's the same wage pressures across the board in your industry, but are there ever any issues with acquisition where there's like wage differences amongst employees from a different company and then you have to do something to make that equitable? Or, I mean, obviously wage details are private too. So yeah. Like, has there been any like trouble there or not so much?
Not so much, but I mean, it's a good question, right? I mean, when you're, and it's really more location specific than it is anything, right? So as long as the nurses, you know, what we pay our nurses in one location may, you know, vary dramatically from what we pay our nurses in another location, simply because those reimbursements, remember, they're state mandated, right? So the wage swings could be huge, but it's all based on the Medicaid reimbursement. And not that our nurses don't ask, right? You know, what do the nurses in Texas make? And if it's a Kansas nurse, right? They never ask that question. They might say, hey, am I paid equitably to the other nurses that are working in my location? And we can look them all in the eye and say, you sure are, right? So as long as you're doing that, then, you know, you're good, right? But really with the wage pressure in a location really comes from the other clinical settings and, you know, what's going on with those. And in particular today too, James, like, you know, look, no secret, right? Inflation's hitting everybody. Everybody's trying to, you know, monetize. And if a nurse can go work somewhere else for $5 or $6 or $10 more an hour, and that's really beneficial to his or her family, then that's what they're going to do, right? Given today's market, you know,
particularly if they have kids or
that's, you
know, it. Just a lot of financial.
Amen. Yep.
You know, I feel like your industry is just, there's probably a lot of money being put into lobbying, right?
Yes.
Because like you,
that's right.
You need to get the Medicaid
that's right.
Up as much as possible.
And that's
you need
right.
constant communication with Congress, right?
You got it. You got it. But as you know, the wheels of a government turn slowly, right?
So
and it's a grind.
Is inflation hurting you all? Because it's like the reimbursements must be, I mean, that must be tricky, right? Because rising costs, but then you have locked in reimbursements.
You got it. Bingo.
That's tough.
It's tough.
That's really tough.
It really is. It makes it harder to compete with wages in other clinical settings. We can't just move the needle on our wages because we're not getting it on the back end.
You can't raise rates, your wages by 9%.
That's it. You got it. You got it. Damn. Yeah. That's the challenge. Yep.
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 There it is.
Yep.
That's tough.
Yeah.
That's interesting insight. I'm assuming lobbying is huge. That's why I was thinking.
It is. Yeah. But you got to be able to afford them too. Right. So again, and for us, you know, we say, because of the reimbursement, right? Capital is precious. So we have to, as a company, we have to decide not only how much do we, you know, pay our clinicians, you know, in terms of wage, what's the benefit stack look like? What's that cost? What's that leave us for recruitment, marketing, branding, advertising, right? So I tell people, we do a lot with a little, right? And which is why the service element of what we do is so important. Like the workforce that we're trying to attract and retain is the most sought after workforce in the country, right? So if they're little golden nuggets and you got to treat them as such because they're really, really valuable customers. And it's not only all about wage, it's really a lot about service and how they feel with their interactions with the company. So I know I talk about that a lot, but that's, it's super important in this space. And, you know, that's kind of been my history in terms of, you know, healthcare and the nursing employment market and, you know, that pressure.
Right. I mean, and on the flip side of the service or not flip side, but like parallel to it, it's like the whole thing you talked about, like speed.
Yeah.
Right. If you're competing with other companies, particularly in some environments, which may be providing a few more bucks an hour, can you respond to that job application faster? Can you go on the phone, build report faster? Can you get that offer out faster?
That's right.
If somebody, you know, the one thing is like, you know, if you, as long as they get started with you, they might not return the calls of some of the other ones, right? So it's like speed. So operational efficiency and processes.
You got it. Yep. And once they start working for us, then it's about relationship building, solidifying that. Because inevitably, right, it happens probably every day. Our nurses are getting phone calls, emails, and text messages from our competitors saying, come to us. And they say, you know something? I like Thrive Skilled Pediatric Care. They treat me well, right? And could I go there and make a buck an hour more? Maybe. The benefit's going to be plus or minus the same? Maybe, right? But I feel a connection. I've got a really good relationship with the people that at the office that take care of me and service me. And I love my patient and I love the family. I'm not going anywhere, right? So it's the service element of this is huge.
So one more question that's a little bit more, you know, focused on COVID, just because you're in the healthcare space. Yeah. What was that like, man? Just like trying to recruit in that environment where, you know, supply super short,
right,
and super high,
right,
wage pressures.
Yeah,
I mean, it's like you're going from one battle to the next. You're going from that to high inflation environment.
Yeah,
I mean, what was that like initially, and how did you do the best? I mean, how did you get through it?
Yeah, no, great question. So when it first hit, you know, we weren't sure we were going to have a business, right? So, you know, we got tipped upside down, right? So initially, the parents of the kids that we take care of were really scared, right? Like, because, you know, COVID for a medically fragile child could kill them. Right.
Yeah. That's so tough. Wow.
A lot of the parents said when it first hit, they're like, no nurses in the house. Right. Like they were like, nobody, not even the nurse we've had working here for 5 years. We don't want them in exposure. And we quickly jumped on it in terms of protocols and procedures and, you know, safety and testing and all. We jumped all over that to make sure that the parents knew it was as important to us as it was important to them. So they slowly let us back in. The nurses that they had on service for their particular child, they would say, give me back my nurses, or the nurses that have worked here, but no new ones. And then they started to say, okay, well, we'll give us, you know, the nurses we had, and we'll take some new ones too, right? Because remember, if we're not providing services to that child, mom and dad are doing it, right? So they were overwhelmed, right? But they were like, oh my God, you know, if our child gets sick from COVID, they could die. Like, we'll do it ourselves, right? And then reassurance that we're taking all the safety protocols, we're following all the CDC guidelines and then some, and we're communicating that. They quickly got comfortable that, you know, we were doing everything we needed to do to keep them and their family safe. So the spigot slowly opened back up again. But the supply was squeezed, right? Because now the nurses are going to the hospitals on the COVID floors, making crazy money. They're going to the testing clinics, making crazy money. Then the vaccine clinics. So we were competing, you know, for that talent that had, you know, left us, not in, not a tsunami, but, you know, they monetized, right? So there was the outreach of, hey, you know, we worked together in the past. Could you pick up a weekend shift, or could you pick up a couple of nights a week? And we worked really hard to claw back the nurses that had left us during the pandemic. And now it's definitely flattened out, but you're right. Like, now you get hit with inflation and wage pressure, and, you know, it's a constant challenge to recruit and retain.
I was on mute.
That's okay.
Somebody like making noise outside my office.
Yeah, I get it.
But yeah, anyways, but when it comes to pricing, right, not 100% of it has to be covered by Medicaid. So for instance, I'm assuming the parents cover a certain percentage of the cost too, which gives, you can set your pricing a little bit higher, or is that not how it's done?
I mean, for some, if they're private pay, yeah, mm-hmm. but you know, that's a lot of money, right? So you've got to have someone who's, you know, someone who can afford that. If they're going to private pay, then sure, we can staff them 24/7 around the clock, but that's not the case. I mean, a lot of our kids live in remote areas and come from totally varying socioeconomic backgrounds. And again, that makes it a challenge as well, right? So for our nurses, you know, I call it the four legs of the stool, right? One, they got to have the clinical skills that support that child, right? Whatever they have going on, the nurse has to be able to take care of that kid, depending on their acuity level, right? Two, they got to live in proximity to be able to drive to and from their home to the child's home, right? And depending on where that child lives and they qualify clinically, it could be 45, 50 miles away. They got to be willing to make that ride, right? And some say, nope, too far for me, right?
Or some might say yes and then do the drive a few times and realize.
And then they're like, I'm out. Exactly, right?
That's tough. That's tough.
And number three is, it's not a typical hospital shift. 8-hour day, 8-hour evening, 8-hour night, 12-hour day, 12-hour night. It could be the parents say, listen, we got to work. So we need nursing services from 6 a.m. to 4 p.m. Or we got to sleep. We need 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. or 11 p.m. to 7 a.m., whatever that is, right? And everything in between. So the nurse has to be willing to work the shifts that the parents want. Now, there's some give and take there. And what we've noticed over the years post-pandemic is the parents have gotten much more flexible with the hours that they'll take. And then the fourth leg of the stool is, you walk into that house and you happen to have a black t-shirt on, and you might be the best nurse that ever walk across the threshold. But the parents said, oh my gosh, James walked in and he seems like a really nice guy, but he had a black t-shirt on. You guys know we don't like black t-shirts, right? So find us another one. We're like, we got James, right? So, and conversely, James, you might walk into that house and you might look and see drug paraphernalia or weapons, and you might say, nope, not for me, right?
Right.
So it's all those things go into the match, right? And but at the end of the day, this is all about the medically fragile kids, and the nurses are incredibly committed to these kids and they'll do a lot to provide services to these kids, drive 45, 50 miles, you know, turn a blind eye to maybe some things that are going on to be able to take care of that kid. Right. And that puts them in a, you know, it's just a different, you know,
yeah, I can tell. I mean, I can feel the passion from you too.
Yeah.
It's definitely a mission.
It's awesome. I love what mission. I do. Like, I love what we do. I have a real purpose every day in the work that I do. It's hard.
Yeah.
Right. The recruit and retention of clinicians on our wage scale. It's hard.
No, it's incredible, incredible work. And I'm glad there's people like you and your team out there.
yeah.
It's well, thank you. You know, this has been really, really super engaging, and there's a lot of great insights here for people to listen to. And learn from, and we covered a lot of topics that we haven't thus far on the show. So
good.
We'll make sure to put in like a episode title that really shares some of the different things that we've discussed, so people can pick it out from the list. Cause I think there's going to be a lot of insights here that they might've not considered before.
Excellent.
So this has been great, Jim. And I just wanted to say, you know, thank you for joining us on the show today. And, you know, I guess the last question would just be, if people want to engage with you online, where can they find you? Is there anywhere they should be reaching out?
Yeah. I mean, so my, you know, I obviously have a LinkedIn profile and, you know, I'm at Thrive Skill Pediatric Care, and you can, you know, Google us and you'll find us online. And, yeah, so I'm happy to, you know, hear from anybody and connect with anybody. And, you know, I'm an open book, and my network's broad just because I'm, you know, I'm old and I've been at it a while. And, but you know, networking for me is important, right? And, you know, you connect with people and other areas and businesses, and you learn things, and, you know, there are opportunities to connect and share, you know, share whatever it is related to recruiting and tactics and, you know, other types of tips and tricks and, you know, whatever makes it work. So, and I'm happy to do that with anybody as well. So, you know, thank you guys for having me. I enjoyed being here and dialoguing with you, James, and insightful questions, and you certainly get it. So I appreciate that.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And for everybody tuning in, thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you next time. Take care.
Thank you for tuning in to the Breakthrough Hiring Show. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode and gained a lot of valuable insights to help guide your talent strategy. I also want to say thank you to my team at Secure Vision for making the show possible. Secure Vision is the number one embedded recruitment provider, and we are a 3-time category leader on G2. Secure Vision partners with over 150 companies to provide on-demand recruiters who specialize in either tech, revenue, or G&A. For more information, you can visit securevision.io. For more content, you can follow me on LinkedIn at James Mackey or on Twitter at James Mackey DMV. We've dropped links in the description. If you want to be on our show or have any topics you'd like for us to cover, reach out at breakthroughhiring.io. We really appreciate your support with reviews on Apple Podcasts. And lastly, make sure to tune in every Tuesday and Thursday for a new episode. See you next time.